Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Painting the Stream. I am one of your hosts. My name is Dan Reichert. Sitting across the table from me, bundled up in a winter blanket.
Winter blanket?
I don't know. You wear blankets in the winter? Do you wear? You don't really wear blankets, do you?
You don't wear blankets, and I think we've had this blanket on the couch through all the seasons.
That's true, but you seem especially wintry right now.
I'm bundled.
The person I'm talking to is Bianca Reichert, my wife. How are you doing?
Yes, that's me. I'm well. How are you, Daniel?
I am well as well.
We're a bunch of well people.
We are well folks.
Well people in the city.
Yes, that's what they call us.
Next ABC hit sitcom.
Yep.
Well people in the city who live in the wells and live off of scraps that people throw into the little grates that are on the sidewalks. We're the well people of New York City. No one wants to look at us or acknowledge our existence, but we're there. We're not going anywhere, sugar.
Did you just come up with an entire pilot and character for yourself in 1 minute since we've started this podcast? How are you doing?
I'm good. Well, we already went through this.
So we watched some more programming, as we are wont to do on Painting the Stream.
That's the whole thing about the show is we watch thing and then we talk about it. And it's great to think that people listen.
Yeah, they do. And yeah, we're very thankful for it.
It's very cool.
More and more people every week, it seems.
And we appreciate it, yeah.
Yes. We usually watch stuff together, but I've been doing some traveling recently. So we watched The Ballad of Buster Scruggs on Netflix.
And thank God we did, because I don't think I could have watched this with you.
Oh, and like two, because of the length?
No, because it's just, I just couldn't have watched it with you. It's one of those things where it has to be experienced independently.
Are you being sarcastic?
I don't know. I'm just rambling.
Okay, I was going to say, we haven't talked about this at all, and I was just wondering if it had some like profound effect on you that it didn't quite have on me.
Not at all.
Okay. So for those who haven't heard of it, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is an anthology Western on Netflix. And the thing that I think drew us to it is because it is a full-on Coen Brothers film.
Yes.
It is written and directed by the Coen Brothers. We are Coen fans for sure. I'd say Fargo.
Which brother do you prefer?
I couldn't point them out in a police lineup, so I'm not sure. I don't think I've ever seen interviews with them or anything. I know they were talked about a lot in Minneapolis when I lived there. I think they're from around there.
Yeah, they have to be around there. I'm trying to think if there was ever a Coen Brothers movie that I super hated. I think I've at least like kind of enjoyed or super enjoyed everything they've done.
I feel like you started hearing about their stuff less after the like Oh Brother in the early like 2000s, because like they were on a roll with like in the 90s between like the late 90s specifically, like Fargo, Lebowski, and Oh Brother all came out really soon, one after another, and all of those were just like extremely well received. I'm not sure commercially, but they're
No Country for Old Men came out.
Oh, right. That
was that like 2009?
That was, I don't think it was, maybe it was. It was the same year as There Will Be Blood. I remember that. So maybe that would have been like the late
2000s. That was really good. I thought A Serious Man was pretty good.
See, I haven't seen a lot of those, like, aughts period. I haven't seen that. In between Oh Brother. And actually, I saw Oh Brother for the first time with you, like, a couple years ago.
Yeah, I know, Dan. I know, okay?
I'm telling the people are listening. I'm telling the people.
I liked that movie.
Oh Brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good.
I know.
And why are you disappointed sounding?
Because I sound like such a chump. Like, everyone likes that movie.
Everyone also loves Lebowski and Fargo. Yeah. You had not seen Lebowski until a few years ago. And I remember thinking, like, it's been quoted so much for so long.
That's what I was worried about. And I knew the quotes going into it. I knew, like, the dude abides. And I knew it was about bowling. At least that's what I thought it was about.
Yeah, not so much.
But, I was dying through that movie. Some of those scenes just absolutely killed me.
I think that's right up there with Walk Hard is like the movie that I've seen you laugh the most at.
Yeah.
It's like Lebowski and Walk Hard. We are fans of the Coen Brothers. I don't think either of us have seen the entire filmography of those two. But their track record is quite good. So we figured we ought to give this a shot here. And before we get into each of the six stories here, because it's six anthology
little
stories.
Vignettes.
Yeah, little vignettes of the West. Overall, I would say the quality is kind of up and down throughout this. Mm-hmm. I would say there were moments that I thought were really good and, you know, really evoked like the Coen stuff that I liked a lot. And there were a couple that I was just like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I wonder, the fact that this was put out as one movie with these different chapters that were obviously, you know, completely standalone and that, you know, one story didn't really affect the other one. I wonder if it was meant to be consumed in one sitting, or if the way we watched it, which I don't know if we mentioned, but like, I know for me, I watched it like, oh, I'll watch one chapter today, the other chapter tomorrow and stuff. I wonder if our experience would have been different if we would have sat and like watched through the entire thing.
Yeah, it's hard to say because we were both just kind of really busy over these last couple weeks. And so we kind of piecemealed it.
Right. I mean, one thing I noticed, like an underlying thing about each chapter, is that at least one person dies in every chapter.
I guess, yeah.
Except in the last chapter, they're, like, already dead.
Right, right. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
They've always been known for kind of, like, their dark humor and subject matters and stuff.
Yeah.
Even when they've not done straight-up comedy, like O Brother. Or, sorry, No Country. O Brother's definitely a comedy.
I would say that this Ballad of Buster Scruggs is a commentary on life and death, but I don't know what that commentary is.
The overall thing?
I have no idea what they're trying to say.
Yeah, despite the fact that we have a podcast about watching movies and TV and me having a degree from university saying I'm a film major, we don't really know what
can
we're
I take,
talking
can
about
Can I take a
all.
Guess? Can I just ramble off the...
Do it.
Out of my
what
ass?
What is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the full anthology,
the full anthology?
Representing?
The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is a commentary on life and death that demonstrates how fickle life can be and how arbitrary death can be. And that man killing man, man's pursuit of exploiting nature, and nature's ultimate prevailing over them, represents how death is inescapable for all of us.
When does nature prevail?
I was thinking of the gold mining thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Hey, that's the type of thing.
That was literally like a well people of New York City style rambling.
That sounds like something I would have written on an essay section of a test in film school and made it sound like bullshit my way through it enough to pass.
Yeah.
So good work.
My brother, Dan, tells the story about when he was in like physics class in high school and there was a bonus question on the test that he took. And the teacher put a chair on the table. And the teacher said, like, knowing everything that you've been taught, like, prove to me that this chair isn't really here. Something like that. And Dan just wrote, what chair? And
Did he pass?
Yeah, he got that question. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if
what
that was
a bullshit question.
Answer. Yeah, but Dan's really good at that kind of
stuff. Oh, nice. So. I can see that. Let's let's break down, now that we know the whole theme, thanks to Bonk there.
That's not the West. That's Swamp People, right?
Is it Deliverance?
Yeah.
The banjo guy? I haven't seen it. I just know the Simpsons parodied it.
That's in the swamp, right?
I think it's about weird swamp people.
Oh, okay. Well, I take it back.
Okay. Okay, how about this?
Wow.
There you go.
What is that instrument? That thing with the stick that's got like the ridges on it?
A washboard thing?
You know what I'm talking about?
Like one of those, like the metal, like clingle clangle?
No, it's not a metal thing. It's usually wood, and then it'll be like a stick that has a little ball on the end, and you like graze the stick across the ridges.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know.
First in our anthology, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Speaking of music, is the musical entry of this anthology, and also the titular story. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and we meet old Buster right at the beginning there. I gotta say, whoever this guy is, I did not recognize him from anything. The guy who plays Buster, I thought was extremely well cast.
Oh, that's Richard Linklater.
Who's that?
I don't know. I just made that up. I know that.
Is that actually his name?
That's a name, but I don't. It's
someone. It's
not
someone's
his name.
You're full of accurate information. Sorry. So far. So whoever this guy is, I thought he did a great job. He looks like this like living cartoon character, and I think that's definitely like they're playing up almost like a Bugs Bunny like guy who's
honestly this whole thing was kind of cartoonish. Like I felt like nothing was meant to be realistic.
Like the entire film?
Yeah, I felt like it was all kind of over the top. Like,
I would say we'll get to it, but I think one later on was kind of the most grounded story of the bunch. But this is definitely the wackiest one, the musical.
I thought it was great. It was a nice way to open it because it was so lighthearted and he seemed – I thought he was going to be like a – a jester type of like a fool, but he actually knew. He was a really good sharpshooter, and
the lighthearted one is the one that starts with a guy coming in and slaughtering an entire poker game, and then like shooting a man's fingers off, and so yeah, that's what starts. He's singing the song about cool clear water, and he's got his horse Dan, and he's singing to him, and like I actually really like the like three songs that are
yes,
in this one,
yes,
and I think this is actually, well, we'll get to our rankings, but spoiler, I think this is my favorite one.
Okay.
And this is from the beginning. And so, yeah, he's just riding around, singing songs. He goes to a poker game and kind of shoots up the place. They don't think he's enough of an outlaw or whatever. And then he winds up just smoking them all.
Right. I mean, they're just judging him by what he looks like. And he looks like a, you know, a fool. Like yeah. a silly guy that, you know, can't shoot. It's just a sing-songy. What is it called, those people that go around? A bard?
A bard, yeah. There's a good like Looney Tunes joke when he pats his suit down when mm-hmm. he comes in off the trail and mm-hmm. like there's a smoke, or a human-shaped smoke thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, real lighthearted until he murders everyone terribly at the table.
In a really cool way. Like, his dead-eye meter was totally full.
Oh, yeah. He ate a bunch of cans of corn or fancy gin or whatever you have to drink
chewing
beforehand.
Tobacco or something.
Yes. And so he leaves there. He goes to another, like, saloon. And it's kind of like a bigger, fancier one.
In, like, a town, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of people there. And they got, like, a rule against bringing your firearms in. So... this one dude pulls a gun on him, Surly Joe, and he like does this cool thing where he kicks the plank of the mm-hmm. table and he makes Joe like shoot himself three
That's
times
really
in the head
cool.
and then just sings over his corpse for a while.
Yeah, and everyone joins him in song with this guy whose like face is just a mush.
Oh, it's completely gone. Yeah, it's like brutally violent. And like the song is really, it's like, oh, Surly Joe. It's a really catchy, fun little jingle. But then you see Surly Joe's brother who's just like, hey, you just horribly murdered my brother mm-hmm. or made him murder himself. Mm-hmm. And so they have a duel, and that's the guy who they have a duel in. Buster just like shoots off all of his fingers.
Yeah.
You know, it's very realistic violence for as cartoony as this chapter is. And he like does that thing where he's got the mirror.
I don't think it's really realistic that someone from a far distance could shoot off each person's finger.
Not the specific act of shooting, but like it's like bloody and like, you know, they're animating it. Like the effects are like supposed to be realistic.
Well, I don't think they really shot that guy's fingers off.
No, they used movie magic. That's something I learned about
magic
in film
of
school.
The cinema.
Yes. And he shoots him through a mirror. But then this other dude shows up, and he's got a quicker draw, and he shoots old Buster in the head. I kind of liked the reveal when he took the hat off, mm-hmm. and he saw the blood, and then it pans up, and you see a bullet through old Buster's
yeah.
skull there.
Yeah.
And he floats away to heaven, like strumming a instrument, singing about how he hopes people are kinder up there. And I thought that was a nice little song to end it on,
it
too.
It seems like he meant well, but like he seems like as a nice guy if you treat him good. But if you cross him... you know, you're probably not going to get out alive.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that he named his horse Dan.
Yes.
Because that's your name.
That is my name.
I would never name a horse like Dan or Bianca or something
like
that.
Like a person name or specifically
a
person you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't name a horse a person name because I feel like with horses, it's kind of accepted that you can name them crazy shit and then just call them something for short.
Oh, yeah. You've had me watch some of that Triple Crown stuff before and those horses have crazy names.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite crazy horse name?
Oh, my favorite crazy horse name? Well, American Pharaoh is...
that's not crazy. That's just cool.
It's just really badass. Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, he's the one that won, so that's the one that immediately is coming to my mind.
Yeah.
That's probably why. I remember Smarty Jones, who
okay.
almost won. That was the first Triple Crown I ever watched in 2004. Smarty Jones
right.
Got the first two races and then came in second on the last one. So
they have weird ones sometimes that are like the old Pappy's favorite chair. Like, that's the name of a thing, I guess. That's a living thing with that name.
Yeah. When it comes to horses... I, you know, really enjoy horseback riding, and I think horses are really cool. But I try to keep that close to the vest, as I tell everyone on this podcast about it, because there's such a reputation that people that, especially women that like horses, have of being weird.
Fancy like?
Not fancy, just like weird horse ladies.
For the record, I've been with you for about 4 years now. Never thought of you as a weird horse lady.
Well, I don't have any horses. I think if I was able to, I would have a horse or two if I had that ability.
We'll get there.
But I mean, people that are really into horses are like, they have like a weird reputation. I don't know if it's, I don't know. Wow.
I think you like animals. You love horses. You love pigs. I've seen you.
I love all animals.
I've seen you head over heels with numerous different animals.
Remember that parrot we met named Rambo?
I don't want to get
too off track.
He was a parrot that just constantly screamed his name Rambo, but rolled his R's,
yeah.
and it was awesome.
Can you roll your R's and do it?
Rambo! Rambo!
That's awesome.
Fraser just perked his head up when I started doing that. So we'll move on to the second one here. Mm-hmm. So it is Near Algodones. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that right. So this is the one with James Franco, and he plays like a bank robber dude, like... I don't think there's a whole lot to say about this one. So
very
he basically
simple.
Goes in to rob a bank. The dude at the bank is that guy that everyone's seen a million times, but no one knows his name. He was the stapler guy in Office Space. He was in Dodgeball. He's the guy in Barry that sends Barry out on missions. He's
mm-hmm.
always this like character actor in comedies. I'm sure I have heard his name at some point, but he's just that guy. You'll know him when you see him. And so he tries to rob the bank from that guy. And the guy, like, does he pull a gun on him? And that's when Franco leaves. And he's, like, hiding behind a rock. I'm trying to think of, like, why Franco
left. He pulls
left.
A gun on him. And then Franco, like, hides behind something, takes cover. And then when he gets up, the guy is gone.
Right. That's right. And then, so they're outside the bank at this point, and bank dude is covered in pans. Like, pots and pans all over. Right. It's like a PUBG type thing where he's just, you know.
It's like, I think in the first Fallout, the Raiders would put, like, weird makeshift armor on.
Oh, yeah. Where it's, like, post-apocalyptic armor yeah. where it's all, like, makeshift. Yeah. So the guy runs out, and he's, like, sprinting at James Franco. And Franco keeps trying to shoot him, and it keeps ricocheting off. And that guy keeps, you know, pan shot. And then I don't remember if he actually winds up. Does he kill the guy? Because the next thing, oh, no, he gets caught thing you know, they're about to hang him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's like, you know, six constables or whatever. I don't know what you call lawmen in the Old West. But they're about to hang him. And then a bunch of Native Americans show up and there's a whole kerfuffle. And so all the lawmen get kind of driven out or shot or whatever. And the Native Americans just leave him there. Yeah. So he's got a noose around his neck. He's sitting on a horse. And he, like, somehow escapes. He, like, ekes his way up to one of the spears, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's implied that he's able to free himself. But then he gets caught.
Doesn't someone
real.
Shoot him down?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Some random dude does show up and shoots him down, but then they both get arrested.
Yeah.
And then they go to get hung. And then he sees a pretty girl in the audience, and he says, hey, there's a pretty girl. And then he just gets hung.
Yeah, it's, you know, that was a sweet moment, I thought.
Yeah.
I feel like if I was in that position, I would just look around desperately for either someone familiar to me or someone or something that I thought was nice looking.
Yeah. It seemed like he had a pleasant thing right before a smile from a stranger right at the end there. But overall, yeah, not a whole lot going on in this one. But a fun little vignette, you know. It kind of reminds me of, like, you know, Looney Tunes where they would have, like, 15-minute or you know, 7-8-minute long things.
Right.
Just a little self-contained weird story.
Was this one on the shorter side compared to the others? It felt really short to me. I don't know if that's because not a lot happened.
I think the first two definitely were because I remember knowing that there were six of these stories. And I remember pausing at the end of the second one and being like, this doesn't seem like there's going to be six if they're all this length. So right. I think the first couple were pretty short, especially this one.
Mm.
But the next one, man, like we get a lot of stars in this. A good amount of recognizable stars. Mm-hmm. Biggest one being maybe Liam Neeson here in the third one.
I love Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson is a varied and versatile actor who has been in a lot of stuff
that
I like
so
a lot.
He's just so cool.
He's just a cool, tough old dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Liam Neeson a lot. Well... He could do this meal ticket episode or whatever you want to call it.
I mean, I wouldn't
chapter.
Say it was bad because of him.
No.
And
he
honestly
did great.
Don't think it was bad. I just thought it was like nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't really go anywhere. So this is another one of those that it was fairly short. And basically, Liam Neeson, I don't know if we ever even catch the character's name. He's just kind of going town to town.
Yeah, I don't think there are like names in this.
Except for Harrison. Harrison is his actor.
Oh, that's the limbless guy?
Yeah, so he's going town to town with this limbless guy. And he props him up on a chair and he puts on these little shows. And the limbless guy does, you know, his versions of like Shakespeare plays or the Gettysburg Address. And he's very, very theatrical. Mm-hmm. And like the guy was a really good actor. But eventually... He just, like, isn't making much money. They're mm-hmm. going to these towns that don't have many people. And then Liam Neeson sees a guy that's got, like, a chicken that can presumably do math. Mm-hmm. And people are, like, paying so much for it. So he buys the chicken. Then they go to this bridge. And they show him throwing a rock off it. And at first I wondered, like, oh, okay, is he contemplating suicide? Or is he going to throw the guy off it or
I thought he was
something?
Doing it to see how deep the water was.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was wondering. Like, oh, would I die if I jumped off this or if I threw someone off this? And I think it's definitely implied that, like, he comes back. I think the implication is that he's gotten his money out of the limbless guy and he mm-hmm. throws him off. And he's got his chicken. And that's his new meal ticket.
Right,
that's his
right.
new thing. But, like... I mean, all the performances were great and everything, but again, this one...
You know what this reminded me of?
What's that?
I watched somewhat recently, I guess it was like a few months ago now, The Handmaid's Tale, mm-hmm. the movie by the guy who did Old Boy. And in it, they had a woman who... It was set in like 1920s Japan. And they had a woman who read erotic literature to a bunch of like wealthy guys.
Okay.
Why didn't they just have this limbless guy read porn? He would have made so much money.
Were they hard up for that in the West? I mean, they had like prostitutes and stuff and saloons.
Yeah, but still, come on.
He was reading a saucy tale to
Marquis de Sade or some shit.
Some horny frontiersman.
I don't know. but so yeah, he replaced him with this mathematical chicken.
Yeah,
which and then, I will say it was very cool.
I mean, I would love to watch that chicken. Yeah. That I would pay money to see that chicken do math.
Yeah, chickens, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about chickens.
That's what you always say. Follow up on that thought in great detail.
Let's move on.
Okay. So the next one is All Gold Canyon, which is accidentally the most literal thing we've ever covered on this podcast, because it's Tom Waits just panning for gold. He's panning a stream for gold.
Yes.
And Tom Waits just looks like he was born to play an old gold prospector. He has always looked like that for his entire weird life.
Wow, yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, every time.
He always looked like he should be an old gold prospector.
I remember learning of him in like the mid-90s and being like, oh, it's that guy that looks like a weird old gold prospector. And he's never not looked like that. So, even when he doesn't have a giant beard, he just looks like he should be in the hills.
And one step further, if you just hear his songs, you would think that this man has to look like an old gold prospector.
Oh, 100%. I think the first song of his I heard was the one in Fight Club, and it's just like, I'm going to wish with a wish in town. Let's go. It's a gold prospector man.
Yeah, that's who it is.
Yes. So he's doing what he does.
He seems very kindly. I really liked him.
I loved this character. I thought I like how he constantly refers to Mr. Pocket. He's always looking for a pocket of gold. And so this is just kind of like almost like the silent movie for a little bit, other than him saying Mr. Pocket all the time. Mm-hmm. So he's panning the stream. He's digging. He's looking for a pocket of gold there. Right. He's by himself. At one point, he talks to like an owl because he's like trying to steal an egg to make breakfast.
Yeah, and then I guess in a reference to the previous chapter, when he takes the eggs and he puts like all but one back, he's like, oh, how much can a bird count anyway?
Oh, I didn't catch that. Okay, yeah. Because the counting bird.
Anyway.
So he starts digging and he does find a big chunk of gold. Finally.
Yes.
He gets all excited. And it turns out some jerks behind him, he's been watching him do all the work just
he
to come
all
in
the work.
And shoot him. But the bullet went right through old Tom Waits there and they get into a little kerfuffle. I've said kerfuffle twice in like
you
5 minutes now.
This is more than I've ever heard you
I'm
say.
I'm sorry I'm saying kerfuffle.
More than I've
so
ever
much.
Heard that word.
I'm sorry. It seems like something they'd say in the Old West. Maybe it's bringing it out of me.
All right.
No? Okay. So he gets shot. It goes straight through, comes out the other side. Waits is able to kind of get the upper hand and shoot the dude. So he kills the young dude. And that's pretty much it. He throws the dude in the little place where the pocket of gold is. Mm-hmm. And we presume that Tom Waits lives the rest of his weird old life being rich.
Yeah. You know, it's got to be really tough being someone like, even if you happen to find gold finally, how fortunate that is. Because back in the day, if someone just came along with weapons, you would have no choice. You would either be killed or you would have to give the gold to the person. I mean, it's not like, you know, there was, you know, ways to recover trace evidence and prove that you were the original, you know, finder of the gold.
I don't think there was an HSBC or whatever the insurance thing that makes your banks, you know, every bank says like insured up to 100,000 by the HSBC or whatever.
It's not like, you know, he could have just pulled out his phone and emailed his, you know, fiduciary guy and
bringing
like,
the owl as a witness.
Hey man, I found a bunch of gold, just FYI, if someone kills me, just know that it was mine.
I'd say it was wild out there back in those days.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. Just like the Will Smith movie.
It is exactly like the Will Smith movie.
This is set in the Will Smith's Wild Wild West universe.
The greater universe, yeah. We're going to get to the robot spider a bit in a second here. So that was a cute little one. I
liked
that.
It.
And Waits was some obvious but perfect casting.
Yeah, he was great. Just real quick, there's this movie that I think I mentioned to you that I want to watch that I haven't watched yet and is supposedly terrible called Paradise Alley. And it's Tom Waits' theatrical debut.
Oh, really?
And I strongly recommend everyone listening to this go on YouTube and look up the theme song from Paradise Alley because Sylvester Stallone sings the song himself.
Yes.
And it's atrocious, but also so amazing. Because it's so, it is completely devoid of any self-awareness.
Well, that's the beauty of Stallone, is like, he is always the most earnest man in the world, and sometimes that results in just some of the most amazing movies I've ever seen in my entire life, and sometimes it's him throwing 100% into the dumbest shit in the world, whether it's a song, or an arm wrestling movie, or, you know, Judge Dredd, or whatever. Ah, Stallone's great. So the next one, we got The Gal Who Got Rattled, which... This is probably the most kind of straight-faced and straightforward story in the bunch here.
Yes.
It's kind of reserved. It's basically about this girl, Alice, and she's going to like move to Oregon to get married. And so she's on this wagon train here with this adorable dog. What kind of dog was that?
That was a Jack Russell Terrier.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Okay. A very barky dog. President Pierce.
President Pierce.
Yeah, I thought that was a cute name too. And so yeah, they're on this wagon trail. The dog's barking a whole lot, and so one of the guys who's running it, Mr. Knapp, he's like, hey, people are complaining about the dog, got to go shoot him. And I was thinking about you when I was watching this, and I was like, oh, God, I hope they don't shoot the dog. That's going to be so sad. And he kind of walks off into the distance with the dog. You hear the gunshot, and you get a few seconds of, oh, God, that's horrible. And then he walks back, and he's like, eh, I'm kind of a shitty shot. Dog got away. But the story is weird here. It's like she was going to travel with her brother to go to Oregon, and the brother dies. He starts coughing, and so they bury him.
They were going to go, and when they arrived in Oregon, like the brother had his business deal with this guy, and the brother wanted the guy to marry his sister Alice. And, but he actually never met her, so it wasn't like something that was set in stone. And I guess Alice was kind of relying on her brother's, you know, business dealings and, you know, her brother in general as seems to be her only family.
Right.
And then he gets sick and dies in the span of one day. And so she's by herself, and then she, you know, kind of finds solace in is it Mr. Knapp? Is that the name of the guy that
Yeah, Mr. Knapp is kind of an Arthur Morgan thing going on. Yeah. He's like this kindly cowboy type, you know.
Yeah. And so they kind of she goes to him when she needs help or guidance. And then there's a thing with like her, I guess the guy who controls her wagon, the wagon boy.
Yeah. We never really see him,
but he seems to like be trying to swindle her out of money, saying like, oh, your brother promised me this amount when, you know, we set off, this amount when we arrived. And so she looks to Mr. Knapp for like some kind of guidance. What do I do about this? And then he comes up with this plan where they would get married.
Yeah. And he references some law that like, oh, well, one person, if you go to unsettled territory, can get 320 acres of land. But if you're married, you get 640. Mm-hmm. And so he proposes to her. And, you know, he's just been very kind to her. Mm-hmm. This whole like, this is one of the longer ones. It's kind of a slow burn. And so she comes to him the next day and says, like, yeah, I thought about it. Let's get married. And at some point here, she gets reunited with President Pierce. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a cute thing where President Pierce is barking at all these prairie dogs.
Yeah.
Which I like that a lot. But but that's when things take a turn. And Mr. Arthur, who has been talked about before but hasn't really been shown for a lot of this.
He was shown a lot. And Mr. Knapp would try to talk to him all the time, but he would never respond to what he was saying.
Oh, yeah, they would show him at the front of the wagon train, that's right, and then Knapp would tell Alice that, like, oh, yeah, he's an old man, he doesn't have a family, he just sleeps on the floor, and so I decided...
Yeah, but there were quite a few scenes with Mr. Arthur.
Oh, okay, maybe it didn't really...
Yeah, it was like Mr. Knapp would be like, you know, tell him about something that happened, and he wouldn't respond at all. He would tell him, like, oh, I'm proposing to this girl, and he wouldn't respond at all.
That's right, he's just kind of this surly guy who seems, like, good at his job, but doesn't really have much in this world other than leading these wagon trains along. And so, yeah, he comes down to kind of to fetch Alice, who's out on her own. And then a Native American war tribe shows up, and he basically hands Alice a gun, says, hey, sit here. And if things go bad, if they're about to approach or whatever, you know, shoot yourself in the head, because otherwise all sorts of bad stuff's going to happen to you.
Right.
And so the guy kind of fights him off for like two waves. He's shooting, gets a few of them. And then they get close, but then he fights him off. But apparently Alice got too scared and shot herself at some point there.
Well, the one guy, like the Indian, grabbed him and was about to scalp him.
That's
so
right.
So she thought like, oh, fuck, it's over. And then just immediately she got rattled.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She killed herself. But the guy ended up, Mr. Arthur ended up besting the Native American. So
that's right. Yeah, the guy did the Metal Gear Solid 5 horse stealth move where you're hanging off the side and they can't see you. And then you pop up and scare him. So yeah, that was kind of a sad one. You see at the end, the dogs barking at the body of Alice. And I don't know, it was kind of a sweet little story while it happened. I thought the stuff between Alice and Mr. Knapp was, it felt very earnest, and I liked those characters.
There wasn't a lot of getting to know you back in the day, I guess.
It was a lot of, hey, you're a lady.
You're okay? You want to do this?
We're of somewhat compatible age, and your husband is either dead or never happened, so can I be that husband? Yeah. Yeah. I guess slim pickings back then. So the last one here is The Mortal Remains, which I recognize the two guys that sang in this. There was, I think, Brendan Gleeson is the guy's name. I think he's been in a bunch of stuff, but he's always one of those that guys that, you know, he was the bigger dude that sang. Mm-hmm. And then also, basically it all takes place in a stagecoach. And it's weird. It's kind of long of like these two guys being kind of weird and singing songs. And then there's like a French guy, a rich lady, and like this kind of dirty like trapper dude. Yeah. And it's just a lot of talking, really. And it just seemed to really be trying to highlight the differences. Like, oh, here's this fancy lady who says there's two kinds of people. You know, there's the filthy, uneducated, whatever. And then us, you know, the followers of Christ, and we're very proper and everything. And this one, it was a weird one to end on. It just felt like it was this long thing where, like, by the end, it's like it gets really dark, like literally dark outside, and the guys start talking creepily and saying that they are like reapers or these bounty hunters of sorts, and like it seems like the guy that was actually like leading the horses was a corpse, and it's a weird death thing, like a limbo. Like it seemed like they were souls that were kind of
they were already dead. I think they were on the way to the afterlife, and I think like they were all, you know, talking about the same things, but just how they all had very different perspectives on these, you know, these things, and how ultimately it doesn't matter because they're all dying.
Yeah, and I couldn't tell if it was like the thing we were supposed to take from it was that they were being judged like in limbo about whether they were going to go to heaven or hell. Because like at the end, they do go to this hotel and
they go towards the light. And I think that they're in a good spot based purely on the fact that there was that other guy that was being held on the top, like wasn't even inside of the stagecoach.
That's true. And he's in a body bag.
Yeah, I think he was probably going to like hell or whatever.
Huh.
And they probably ended up in the, you know, whatever decent place.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was odd, an odd one to end on. I guess appropriate because it's like, all right, here's like they are dead from the jump rather than dying at some point in the story.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a cool, spooky setting, especially when it starts getting dark and it's like this nighttime wagon ride and everything. Mm-hmm. But overall, I don't know, it just kind of went on for a while. And I feel like I kind of got what was going on with it pretty early on.
Totally.
And so that was it. And so let's rank. Let's rank.
You want to do the Ballad of Buster Scruggs power rankings?
Let's do the Ballad of Buster Scruggs power rankings.
Buster Scruggs power rankings.
So coming in at number 6 here, I think I'm going to put Meal Ticket, the Liam Neeson one.
I put Near Al Gadone.
Oh, the Franco one.
Yeah, just it was fine, but like it was just so boring and, you know, there wasn't much to it. I like the moment at the very end, but
yeah, very short. Very short for sure. My number 5 is Mortal Remains, the one we were just talking about on the stagecoach.
Yeah, I put Meal Ticket for number 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. My number 4 was Near Al Gadone for kind of the same reasons you said. Just not a whole lot going on, but it had a couple little things that made me smile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mortal Remains was my 4th one because, like, it seemed the most supernatural of all the other ones. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a kind of slow way to end the series. Not series, the movie.
Yeah, definitely. Number 3, I've got The Girl Who Got Rattled. Thought it was a nice little story with some decent characters.
I have Ballad of Buster Scruggs for 3.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun and upbeat, but you know, it was more of just like a picture of this character than a story.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, felt like a Looney Tunes short, I thought. Number 2, I've got All Gold Canyon, the
same.
Tom Waits. Okay.
Same.
And that would put, for your number 1, what does that leave?
The Girl Who Got Rattled.
Okay, that was your number 1.
You know, if you know me, Dan, you know I'm a sucker for unrequited love. That's my most favorite thing.
I know that.
For me, it's the greatest tragedy. Just the idea of, you know, what could have been haunting you forever. And just the idea that guy is going to be wondering what if for the rest of his life, Mr. Knapp. And also, I just thought it was a cool story. So.
I thought it was too. Wait, if unrequited love is your favorite thing, did I ruin things by proposing to you?
No. I mean, in terms of like romance stories and stuff like that.
Okay,
yeah,
I thought I would have fucked up there.
So affecting. It's so tragic.
Yeah. My number 1 was Buster Scruggs. I just kind of like it. Just
yeah, you spoiled that for us in the beginning.
Oh, I said that at the beginning, didn't I?
Beginning. Yeah, we knew.
I don't have a great memory. I forgot I said that immediately at the beginning of this podcast. All right, so we're a bit different. It seems like we both were not big on Meal Ticket.
Yeah, I think, the ones that we really hated, I think we were on the same page about.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was, I mean, I am coming from it, like, I went into it as a fan of the Coen brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And from that perspective, I don't think it was that good because, you know, my expectations from them are so high.
Yeah, me too.
But then again, it could just be that some of these themes just went right over my head and maybe I'm just, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, and the thing is, like, the direction and everything and, like, the writing, like, it was all up to, like, Coen Brothers standards. It was all incredibly well made. I just, none of the stories grabbed me enough to really, pull me in for the duration.
Pull me under, I'm not afraid.
Who's that?
Dream Theater.
Oh. That's it for Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Overall, I enjoyed parts of it, but yeah, it's definitely not my favorite Coen Brothers thing.
No, sounds, not by a long shot.
Sounds about the same for you. So, let's move into, do you have any suggestions for folks?
I do. Would you like me to share them, Daniel?
What do you got, honey?
So my recommendation for this week is the HBO miniseries Sharp Objects.
I've heard of this.
I watched it. I binged it. Well, I watched the two episodes like a normal human being, which was like one a week separate from each other. And then when you went on your travels, I took it upon myself to binge the rest of it. And it's a really slow burn, but the payoff is so good. And the acting is incredible. Amy Adams is unbelievably amazing, and Patricia Clarkson is always incredible in everything I've ever seen her in.
Who's Patricia Clarkson?
I knew her from House of Cards.
Okay.
And she was in some other stuff that is escaping me right now, but
okay,
but it's really good. If you want something during the winter break to watch, I highly recommend it. It's I think like 7 episodes, and I will say this isn't a spoiler, but the final episode you want to watch through the credits because it nests a like really important scene in the credits, and I feel like most people would skip it. So if you're going to watch it, don't skip the credits on the final episode.
It's a weird choice. That's risky.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. I have a suggestion as someone who just did some traveling
and lay also it on me, Dan Riker.
Does some commuting day to day. Get some nice noise canceling headphones. Ugh.
Dan got me these noise canceling headphones, and I was just telling him earlier today, it's the best gift anyone has ever gotten me. So what is the, it's, what model is it? Sony?
It is a Sony thing. And again, like we said with suggestions, it's never going to be an ad. Yeah. So I'm just saying these Sony, they're like, I think they retail for like $300.
Super non-ad. They're horribly expensive. But
they're expensive, but like, it's one of those things where I think both you and I, we got just kind of normal medium range to low range headphones our whole lives. And then like you put on some good ones.
And the
like,
amount, the amount that I listen to music, like I'm constantly listening to music and, you know, Dan, you can attest to this, being on this train in the morning is just like a game changer.
It really
is. You feel like you can actually have silence when you're walking around New York City, which otherwise is impossible. There's always noise. So
yeah, I specifically brought it up this week for a suggestion because I was just on a long flight, literally next to a shrieking baby, and I just plugged them into my Switch and played, and like most of it was blocked out. So
get a good pair of noise canceling headphones.
Get a nice pair that can be pricey. You get your Sonys or your Boses, or just look up reviews. Get what you want, but get some good ones. They will help out a lot. So that'll be it for this week. And what we want to do is obviously thank everyone who participates in the listener support program.
Thank you so much.
And we that was a weird little thing that happened to you. Are you okay? You just faint? So, yes, we bring it up each time. Again, if you go to panningthestream.com and click support this podcast, you can help us out $1, $5, or $10 a month, or you can do it just once and cancel it. It's all super easy, very secure. So we actually, I think people like haikus, honey. Because ever since you started doing the haiku stuff, and we made it clear that we only had a handful of supporters right now, and that if they supported, they'd probably get a haiku written about them, we got a couple.
All right. Well, it's definitely just because of that. It's not because they enjoyed our Castlevania episodes or anything.
The most popular episodes we've ever done. That's totally not that. So why don't we go ahead and let's get a haiku for we do one a week.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear for a new one this year.
This is our dear friend Ian.
Ian.
Who was kind enough to donate some money. And I would never ordinarily say his full name, but he does share the name of the guy from Jethro Tull. So I think it's worth talking
about. Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so this is the haiku. Ian. This is for you, bud. Ian Anderson, can you play the flute for us? Aqualung, my friend. It's right. I counted it.
Okay.
Time, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ian. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
and thanks, Bonk, for your haiku.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Since we got a couple new supporters, we'll probably have another one next week.
Maybe.
Before we loop back around. If no one cancels, we'll see.
Yeah. If
is your mom going to cancel?
If someone cancels or if we just ran out of people, we will just redo the. I don't think I've written one for my mom yet, who is a donor.
You could do that.
A supporter, yeah.
Yes. So, yes, thank you to everyone, whether we have covered you with a haiku or not yet.
Cover them with a haiku.
That's a weird way to put that.
Envelop you in our haikus.
Yes.
I'm terrible at writing haikus, and I want everyone to know that I'm aware of it.
Okay.
But it still pleases me to do it. And I'd like to think that the listener for whom the haiku is inspired by, I would like to think that they appreciate it in some level. I know if someone wrote a haiku about me, I would love it. I would never forget it.
Well, we got our little Panning the Stream family here, and I'm sure, you know, since we've got a smaller audience and a handful of supporters, if they like the podcast enough to support it, I'm sure they would love to hear a haiku from old Bonk herself there.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, usual housekeeping stuff here. If you want to give us feedback or anything, you can email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com. We do read all of those. Mm-hmm. We do our best to respond to everyone. Sometimes it takes a little bit. But if you want to follow us at PanTheStream on Twitter, we'll let you know what new episodes are coming up so you can watch along with us if you want to.
Yes.
Or you can just listen to the new ones when those get posted. You can give us the old 5-star review on iTunes. That's always appreciated. But most importantly, just keep listening.
Keep rocking. ROCK in the USA.
Yes. Keep doing that.
Yeah.
So next week, we should tell you what to watch. We figured this out 10 minutes ago as we...
Dan.
Yes?
Don't reveal the business.
Don't expose the business, brother.
Don't expose the business.
Yeah. Okay. We, as has been planned from the beginning, our Christmas episode next week will be... We saw an ad on Hulu. We finished watching SNL, and we saw this thing pop up, and it said Pooka, P-O-O-K-A, with an exclamation point as part of the show. And they said it's like a Christmas horror movie thing. We saw a quick clip of it. It seems like it's a guy who wears a weird light-up bear suit thing for
and it
Christmas.
And corrupts him in some way.
And it corrupts him, and evil stuff happens. Looks to be a little, like, hour and 20-minute long movie. So we're going to see what the hell that is. We have not seen reviews or anything.
A little bit of Halloween with our Christmas.
We're going to mix up the Halloween with the Christmas next week. And we hope all of you are getting ready for a great holiday.
And by the way, happy holidays for everyone who's celebrating Hanukkah. I think it is almost done. It's definitely going to be done by the time
this airs, it definitely will be. So,
and for those celebrating Christmas, Merry Christmas.
Yes, happy holidays to all.
Yeah.
And we will be back next week with Pooka! Exclamation point.
Ah, Pooka!
On Hulu. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.